Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, optimism about some sort of Iran nuclear deal. An analyst believes the likelihood of Greece leaving the Eurozone has increased. The U.S. controversy about flying the Confederate flag.
Those people have a different concept and a perception of what the war was all about. The war was about slavery. They lost the war.
And a real-life cheating ways story from the world of country music. It's all ahead on Voice of America. Five plus one countries and Iran have been huddled in Vienna over an agreement on Iran's nuclear program. International Edition's Jeffrey Young discussed the negotiations with Daryl Kimball, director of the Arms Control Association in Washington. And Jeffrey joins me now. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi.
Welcome back. Nice to have you again. Hey, does Mr. Kimball think both sides are close to a handshake?
Susan, yes. He's optimistic that we will see a deal, and very soon.
Well, it's still possible the two sides could become tripped up on one or two final issues, but I think it is very likely that the P5 plus one group, including the United States and Iran, will reach a comprehensive final deal to block Iran's pathways to nuclear weapons. They have been working extremely hard for some time. We have to remember that in April, they reached a framework agreement that solved all of the major issues. Now they're on the final implementation details, which are very difficult but resolvable in this complex agreement.
We saw just a couple of days ago that Iran added they wanted the sanctions lifted on ballistic missile program, and they also wanted the sanctions on conventional arms sales lifted. What's your take on that?
Well, these issues have always been part of the discussion. They have been not addressed directly by the two parties until recent weeks, which is why we're hearing about them now. What is at issue in particular is the UN resolution that not only put nuclear-related sanctions in place, but an heavy arms embargo against Iran. And Iran is arguing that this is not a nuclear issue, and they want it lifted. I think the two sides will reach a resolution, most probably by phasing out the heavy arms embargo over time as Iran meets its nuclear nonproliferation obligations.
Obviously, in Iran, there are different trains of thoughts. There obviously must be nuclear hardliners who want to preserve the integrity of the program as much as possible. And I'm sure that there must also be what I'll call pragmatists, people that say, look, we've got to cut some kind of a deal. We've got to get the sanctions off our back. We've got to get the economy going again. What is going on that side between these factions?
Well, Iran has invested a tremendous amount of money and political capital and prestige in this nuclear program. But I think they have come to realize that the costs outweigh any benefits. The sanctions regime has been punishing. The economy is not in shambles, but it is suffering because of the sanctions. President Rouhani was elected on the basis of his promise to change that and to get the sanctions lifted and resolve the nuclear issue. So the pragmatists, as well as some of the hardliners, including Supreme Leader Khamenei, have decided to pursue these negotiations. It will be a win-win agreement. Iran will get some of the sanctions relief that they're looking for, but the international community will get the restrictions on Iran's program that ensure that they cannot race to build the bomb, and we will have robust inspections in place forever to give us a short notice alert if Iran tries to do that in the future.
That was Arms Control Association Director Daryl Kimball on the Iran nuclear talks in Vienna.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Let's see what happens, Susan.
My colleague Michael Lippin is here in the studio for the latest on what social media are saying about the Iran talks. Michael, take it away.
Hi, Susan. I will. Okay, if you want to follow the progress of the talks, the best two hashtags to search for on Twitter are hashtag Iran talks and hashtag Iran talks Vienna. One journalist using hashtag Iran talks is CNN's Elise Labbitt. Her handle is at Elise Labbitt CNN. And a short time ago, she tweeted a quote from U.S. Republican Senator Bob Corker. Labbitt cited Corker as saying that there has been a breakthrough in the Iran talks and an agreement is in reach, but will not be finished or announced today. I also found a tweet from TV network France 24 journalist Mark Owen, who did an interview today with a representative of the National Iranian American Council. That's a group advocating in favor of a nuclear deal. The NIAC member Reza Marashi is in Vienna to monitor the negotiations. Mark Owen's Twitter handle is at MarkOwenF24. And he quoted Marashi as saying, a deal is almost there that will make everybody happy. And the key is in the lock, and it just needs to be turned. But the prospect of such a deal has American group Secure America Now quite worried. Its handle is at Secure America, and it tweeted this warning today. Obama said he wants to give Iran nuclear energy. Nuclear energy plus ballistic missile development equals nuclear weapons. Susan?
Well, thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Vitamin C is a popular nutritional supplement. Now, a new Danish study shows that a high concentration of vitamin C in the blood can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and early death. Researchers also found that instead of merely taking vitamin C supplements, the best way to gain these health benefits was to eat fruits and vegetables high in the vitamin. The researchers analyzed the data of about 100,000 Danes that included their DNA as well as the amount of fruits and vegetables they consumed. They found that those who consumed the most fruit and vegetables had a 15% lower risk of developing cardiovascular disease and a 20% lower risk of early death than others who rarely eat fruits and vegetables. The researchers are trying to find out if there are any other factors, along with the vitamin C, that play a role in reducing these risks. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A Greek newspaper reports that Greece is preparing a last-minute reform package worth more than $13 billion in exchange for continued bailout funds from its international creditors. VOA's Victor Beatty is following the story and joins me now in the studio. Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, the government of Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras faces a Friday deadline to submit a reform for aid package to its European partners ahead of a crucial European Union summit scheduled Sunday to determine its future in the 19-nation Eurozone. The plan will reportedly be paid for with tax hikes on corporations, luxury goods, processed foods, restaurants, transport, and even some health services. In Washington Wednesday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew told an audience at the Brookings Institution think tank that it's in everyone's interest that all parties in the Greek fiscal crisis find a solution for the sake of the global economy.
I have continued to believe that it is in the best interest of all parties to find a resolution. Greece needs to have a sustainable debt path and towards a growth path in their future, and a good agreement would give them a better shot at that. I think it's a mistake for the European economy, the global economy, to take the risks that are involved with an uncontrolled crisis in Greece.
Lew acknowledges there is a reluctance within Europe to restructure Greek debt, which he calls unsustainable. He says the question now is, can the parties build enough trust to allow Greece to take the actions necessary? He warns the deadline to reach such an agreement has raised the stakes for the global economy. Gary Huffpower with the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics told me that he has doubts the Greek plan will be approved and the likelihood of Greece leaving the Eurozone has increased.
I think it's a really touch-and-go situation, whether at the weekend the EU, Angela Merkel in particular, tells the Greeks, thank you, but time to leave the Euro. I don't see how their three-year program is going to deal with a very heavy debt load unless the three-year program entails writing off about half the debt, and I don't think it will do that. So I believe Merkel will see this as just kicking this can down the road and will reject it.
And you see a Grexit, as they're calling it, an exit of Greece from the 19-nation Eurozone.
Yes, that's my view, that Greece will leave the Eurozone. They'll provide some, they, when I say they, I mean the International Monetary Fund and the EU, the ECB, the European Central Bank, will provide some transition assistance to go into this separate currency area. That's my projection, and that they will essentially default on about half the debt. because the debt load is about twice what Greece can reasonably expect to service.
Is this going to create a pathway for other weaker members like Spain, Portugal, Italy perhaps to leave?
Well, you've asked exactly the right question. This is the fear of the central leaders, which would be Merkel and Hollande and a couple of other prime ministers, whether this means that there'll be an expectation of disintegration of the Eurozone. So I think they will back it up by very strong measures by the European Central Bank to support the bonds of especially Italy and Spain. France is not such an issue right now. But, you know, the issue is, can this populist uprising in Greece be replicated in Spain or in other countries as a way of walking away from difficult economic problems? And that's what the leaders in Europe want to try to avert. It can't be an easy path for Greece to leave. On the other hand, you have to show support for Italy and Spain. This is a very tricky problem.
Well, as you know, there is an anti-austerity movement called Podemos in Spain. Is this likely to embolden them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It depends on the terms by which Greece gets off the hook. See, this is the problem that Merkel faces. If she is very soft on Greece and says, oh, I'll take your three-year program and, you know, kick it down the road, that's just fuel for this populist movement in Spain. And she's fully aware of all of this. So I don't see how she can, you know, be very soft on Greece and hope to keep the Eurozone together.
Well, thank you, Victor, for that report.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, a U.S. disagreement bubbling for 150 years. A story of the fickle heart from the world of country music. A symbol of America's Civil War 150 years ago, the flag of the states that rebelled against the Union, has continued to wave in parts of the United States, and that has stirred up strong feelings. Many Americans see that flag as a symbol of racism and want it put away for good. International Edition's Jeffrey Young just spoke with a civil rights leader in the state of South Carolina, where lawmakers have decided to take the Confederate flag down from state property. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Susan. The person I spoke to, J.T. McLaughlin, is a president and CEO of the Columbia, South Carolina Urban League. He describes that flag in terms of racism and oppression and rejects those who claim that the flag represents their heritage.
Well, I think those people have a different concept and a perception of what the war was all about. The war was about slavery. They lost the war. They consider it as Northern invasion, Northern aggression. So they feel to a certain degree that they still have the legitimacy to fly the flag. Some people frame it as a heritage symbol. However, when you look at the history is very clear that this flag is a symbol, an active symbol of intimidation, racism, and terrorism that have been inflicted on African-American people for years. It even transcends South Carolina, because when you see these hate groups around the country, they carry this flag as their symbol. I think they use it to try to keep people in their places. I have said to those members of the heritage group who have tried to defend this symbol, I have told them over and over again that you have lost the right of your so-called heritage symbol. You have lost the integrity of that symbol.
It was just a couple of weeks ago that we had a terrible mass murder in Charleston, South Carolina, where someone waving that Confederate flag in videos shot and killed 9 people. How do we heal this? Is there a way to close this gap? Can this flag be put down, and can people move on?
Well, I think that what happened after the massacre of those 9 saints in Charleston, that somehow in South Carolina, we had a consciousness awareness. We had a discernment process where there were people who were aware and became more aware of the hateful nature of this flag, particularly when they saw how the victims' families responded to this massacre, they responded with love. And I think that opened up the hearts of people. And what we're seeing occurring in South Carolina now, this is not a political process. This is a process that has been driven by heartfelt concern, a higher level of consciousness to do what is right, not what is popular, not what is political, but to do what is right. And we're just so grateful for the leadership in South Carolina of our governor and members of the General Assembly that have said this symbol has to go. It is not a symbol of heritage. It is a symbol of hate. It's a symbol of the past. We need to move forward. So we're just grateful for the leadership. And those nine saints that lost their lives in this massacre, their lives were not in vain. We have been trying for over 50 years in South Carolina to remove this flag from the public domain of the state capitol. The state capitol belongs to all people. And so, as they was said in the song Amazing Grace, I once was blind, now I see. South Carolinians see today.
That was J.T. McLaughlin, president and CEO of the Columbia, South Carolina Urban League, a group that has fought for years to take that Confederate flag down.
Thanks, Jeffrey, for filling us in on the story.
This is an important issue, Susan. I'm glad we had a chance to discuss it.
You're tuned to VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new is a prototype of a material that reacts to water. As a graduate student at the Royal College of Art in London, Chow Chen was out and about on a rainy day when he picked up a pine cone and noticed that it reacted to water by closing the tiles of its outer shell. Chow went to the lab and created a laminate that mimics the pine cone. He built a shelter covered with tiles made of this material that opens up on sunny days and closes when it rains. Another use, covering a building with this material, which reacts to rain, exposing a different facade underneath. And how about this? Planting a strip of this material in the pots of your houseplant so that when it senses dry soil, it turns color. Chow says a lot more testing needs to be done, but hopefully soon it shall be known the worldly value of the common pine cone. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossons.
If you're a fan of country music, Brantley Gilbert's story reads like the lyrics of a song. A man who reunited with a long-lost love, but she's married to someone else. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Nikki Strong about Gilbert's story and about another wedding involving a member of Florida Georgia Line.
Summertime in the Northern Hemisphere is a time when a lot of folks get married. Country musicians are no exception. But the story behind one relationship is almost like a country song in and of itself. Nikki Strong of VOA's Country Hits USA joins us in the studio. Nikki, Brantley Gilbert married his one-time former sweetheart.
Yes.
And this is a story.
It is saucy.
So now they met in church when they were young.
Of course.
And they kind
first
of had
verse.
Had a little kindled. Yeah, right. We're in the first verse. Had a little romance kindled, but then she went off and married somebody else.
Yes, they broke up.
And he was dating Jenna Kramer.
Yes.
And you know, so now.
Yes.
Tell our listeners the rest of the story, as they say.
And I think it's interesting. He was dating Jenna Kramer. They broke up. She got married, so she's married. She just recently got married, literally,
right.
In May.
Right.
His current CD is supposed to be about their breakup.
Okay.
Him and Jenna, right? Especially the song, I'm Gone. Okay,
right.
Fine. So while he's gone, apparently his ex-girlfriend, Amber Cochran, was married already to another gentleman.
Right.
And they were apparently, supposedly happily married until Brantley Gilbert shows up on the scene again. And then all of a sudden, their marriage becomes rocky, and they file for a divorce. And she says that her husband was abusive towards her. And he said, oh, no. We're getting divorced because of your cheating ways.
Oh, no.
And go ahead.
Well, now, Brantley Gilbert has written, apparently, you were telling me, some songs that we've heard on country radio, like More Than Miles, and You Don't Know Her Like I Do.
Uh-huh.
These are about...
Amber. Yes.
Get
yes.
Out.
Those are not on his current
No, they're not on the. No, they're on the one that has made him all that money.
Yes, exactly.
On the radio.
Well, he says that they've been together off and on for a long time.
Right.
They obviously had a very strong connection.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And so, but what I think is funny is that when she got divorced from her husband, 26 days later is when she announced her engagement to Brantley Gilbert.
Oh, my. Now, this is a song. If this were Taylor Swift, there'd have been a song written about this already. Okay, so also Florida Georgia Line's Tyler Hubbard. I know young girls' hearts are breaking all over the world now, because he got married as well.
Yes, he did.
Tyler is, putting his Sundays on and, all that kind of thing. He's going to be playing Flip Cup with a wife now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's married.
He is married. He's married to Haley Stummel. They got married July 1st. Now, this is romantic. That date was special to them because it was the 2-year anniversary of their first kiss.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
Goodness.
That sounds like a country lyric, don't you think?
That does sound like a country lyric. Of course, now here's a little something. Mr. and Mrs. Hubbard are headed to the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Isn't that nice?
For their honeymoon.
They are. Oh, wait, don't forget. Her golden retriever, Harley, wore a bow tie. He was the ring bearer.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what. We welcome your comments, your questions, your tweets. You can hit Nikki up at VOA_music.
Yes.
And you can also listen to her on Country Hits USA on VOAnews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
2014 saw no significant improvements in North Korea's deplorable human rights situation. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report, which was just released, North Korea continues to deny its people basic freedoms, such as the freedoms of speech, press, assembly, association, religion, movement, and workers' rights. Furthermore, reports continued of a vast network of political prison camps in which conditions were often harsh and life-threatening, and prisoners were subjected to forced labor, starvation, torture, rape, and forced abortions. Defectors continued to report extrajudicial killings, disappearances, arbitrary detention, arrests of political prisoners, and torture. The judiciary was not independent and did not provide fair trials. Reports continued of severe punishment of some repatriated refugees and their family members. There were also reports of female victims of trafficking among refugees and workers crossing the border into China. The people of North Korea, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, should enjoy the same rights and freedoms as the people of South Korea and the people of every country in the world who are able to speak their minds and elect their leaders and to travel where they want, and not to be placed in labor camps because of something they've said or thought or because of who their relatives are. In recent years inside North Korea, there has been far greater awareness among the population of what their rights are and of how people outside of North Korea live. What has sustained this regime over many years, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, has been its ability to deny people that knowledge. And its ability to do that has eroded considerably in the last few years. And we are doing everything we can to try to get knowledge and information to the people of North Korea so that this trend continues. Change takes time, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski. But when it comes, it often surprises us and goes very quickly. And I think that day will come when we see that happen in North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.